Welcome to this
Thank you.
Untangling Tax podcast, where we discuss tax in a more simplified and interesting way.
That sounds very scary.
Yes. But today we have a special guest in the name of Kariuki Ngari, who is the Managing Director and CEO of StanChart Kenya and StanChart Africa. How do you do that?
What do we do? What? Do the job.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I think the most important thing is
yeah.
Have a team on the ground.
You have a team on the ground.
So it's not as big as it sounds. Okay. You have a team on the ground, whether it's in Kenya or in the rest of Africa.
Yeah.
I have a very capable team from the CEO in most of those markets.
Yeah.
And a very strong executive team in Kenya as well. So it makes my work very easy.
Okay. And yes. How many of markets do you oversee?
Currently, we're in 10. We are currently in the process of reshuffling the Standard Chartered African business.
Okay.
So eventually we'll be left with the 10 businesses on presence.
Mm-hmm.
But then we'll also be serving other markets. We also have a model that serves markets that we are not necessarily in.
Okay.
So that's how the model works.
All right.
Yes.
Well, that's interesting. The reason why I was asking how you manage, because that's 10 markets. It means a lot of work, but you make it look very simple. Anyway. Out of work, who is really Kariuki Ngari? Who is Kariuki Ngari? What are the things that perhaps people don't know about you?
I'm very involved in community service,
mm-hmm.
Very strongly at home.
Okay.
Particularly focusing on the youth mm-hmm. around technology.
Oh, nice.
Because I believe the next generation, the way the world is today, technology is so fast-paced.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't understand technology, if you're not comfortable with technology, you have zero chance in life. When I look back, when I was growing up in the rural areas, all you needed to do was do well in examinations and get the university. And the university, you got the chances that I have gotten.
Mm.
In today's Kenya and the world, that's not enough. If you're not comfortable with technology, if people do not understand what AI is, they are not comfortable using the laptops or just navigating the world that is out there,
mm-hmm.
you are completely disadvantaged. So I want to do something about that for mm-hmm. the young people to see, can they have access to computers? Can they have access to technology?
Mm-hmm.
Can they start training themselves to be comfortable before they even get to university? Because then that gives them a fighting chance in this
yeah.
very, very competitive world.
Okay.
That's something I do.
Wow. And that's good. That's good. In terms of impact, maybe you have a story that you could say, you know, something that really resonates with what you're doing for the youth. Is there maybe something?
You see, if you look at, for instance, today, the number of people who approach me and say, can you help me? I've been admitted to this university
yeah.
and I would like to, one of the requirements, a laptop. So you look at that kid and say, wow. So the only time now you're getting access to technology is actually when you're going to university with a laptop.
Mm.
So after buying for a few, I saw this is not making sense.
Okay.
So this is, you need to make sure that you're teaching people to fish. Mm. So that by the time even they're accessing that laptop, they're very, very comfortable. And also to educate their parents why it is important for them to invest in that kind of technology with the equipment that they need to be successful. And when I look back 2 years, 3 years, this is when people come and tell me, you don't know the difference it made in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel that's the impact I want to create.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. Other than the impacting youth and leading, you know, a global organization, who's Kariuki on the weekend?
I do many things on a weekend. I do very many things. I'm a farmer, like most of us in Kenya.
Okay.
I look after, I've got livestock. I do dairy farming. I do coffee farming. I do avocado farming, so and now I'm starting to get a new passion. It's called shorts, which is goat and sheep.
Oh, nice.
So I'm very busy on the weekend.
Okay.
Completely different from what I do every day. And that allows me to completely free myself up and concentrate on other things and look at and be involved in very, challenge my brain in very, very different ways. How do I increase coffee production? How do I increase my milk production? How do I increase my goat production as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I relax. So that's how I spend my weekends.
Okay.
And I find them very, when I leave the capital city, Nairobi, mm-hmm. and I mm-hmm. travel out,
yeah.
I completely forget about work
okay.
until Sunday when I'm coming back to Nairobi, that's when I remember. Or unless there's a crisis that I need to be involved in on the weekend.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. So I want to now move on to the tax conversation.
Yes. Oh, that wasn't tax. That was.
That, yeah, that was just trying to get to know more about you. And it's quite interesting because sometimes when people look at a professional leading, an institution of your size, they perhaps think that your life just revolves around running Standard Chartered. But you have a life, you want to spend time with family, spend time with your farming activities, spend time with impact, and perhaps those are the kind of things that people also want to know about you leading an institution and perhaps now getting to leading a business. Yeah. So we talk about tax, and I just want to pick your thoughts around what do you think about the tax regime in the country? Does that impact business? Is that important to you who's running a business as CEO and managing director?
It definitely is. I mean, taxes is a cost of doing business. You cannot, if you're doing any forecasting, for instance, especially when you look at shareholders, people who want to make an investment, when you look at it from a perspective of investment, you'll have to see what is the cost of doing business, and tax is one component, because you're putting in money, how will that money get paid back? So it's very, very important. From an organization such as ours, it is important, especially around compliance, because it's not just that you've declared profits and you pay the 30% corporate tax or whatever tax you're supposed to pay, or the normal VAT, excise duties, and et cetera, et cetera. But it's also, how do you comply? How do you ensure that you're complying with each and every regulation that is applicable to your institution?
Mm-hmm.
And it can get complex.
Okay.
It can get complex. Mm. And that is why it's no surprise that at any one time, there's people, even ourselves, you always are the Tax Appeals Tribunal, TAT as it's called, you're in the High Court, because there's always something in matters of interpretation.
Yeah.
And the tax regime in Kenya is complex.
Yeah.
It tells you that it matters interpretation. There's something that it cannot be that all these people are TAT or the High Court.
Mm-hmm.
There must be an issue of interpretation. Okay. It can be an organization such as ours. Yeah. We value compliance very, very highly. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things we'll never compromise on. We'll never take shortcuts. But if you're having these issues with the Kenya Revenue Authority, then it tells you that there's an issue of interpretation, and mostly it's interpretation.
Okay.
So I would say in Kenya it can be complex.
Mm.
So if it's complex for us, it becomes even more complex for the small businesses or for individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes people, makes the issues that we've had in the recent past, whether it was 2024, the June 25th demonstrations, it tells you there was something about tax that people don't understand.
Yeah.
The way the country reacted. It tells you that there are some things probably people understand, but there are also some things that people are asking questions about. So it's a very, in any country, what should really work is simplicity of the tax regime, so that people, it becomes easier to comply, and you don't waste too much money trying to evade it.
Yeah.
Because if it's complicated, you'll try to evade.
Yes.
But if it's easy to comply with, it's easy to file your tax returns.
Mm.
And to be fair, I mean, the Revenue Authority has gone a long way in simplifying. If we look at just the recent returns, last month, we are getting, they issued very positive feedback in terms of the people who are giving the returns on time, which tells you that it's getting easier and simpler to comply, which is very, very important.
Yeah. Adding to targets, which they also missed, means perhaps there's something you're doing right,
Exactly, okay. Yeah.
And when you compare that with the other markets that you oversee in Africa, what are some of the comparisons that you're able to see between Kenya's tax regime and the regime in the other countries that you oversee?
I think in terms of Kenya tends to have, the thing that I would say Kenya has a big advantage is that there's a proper process if there's a dispute, which is not punitive. It's not punitive. If you have a problem with the Kenya Revenue Authority, you go to the Tax Appeals Tribunal. If you lose, or you're not comfortable, whichever party is not comfortable, you go to the High Court. Whoever loses is not comfortable, they can go to the Court of Appeal, and if necessary, if it's a constitutional matter, you go all the way to the Supreme Court.
Mm.
So there's a very good process
to
deal with disputes.
Okay.
In some other jurisdictions, not as much.
Okay.
We've seen some of them are punitive. So if the dispute is, let's say for argument's sake, $5 million, you're supposed to put aside maybe 40, 50 or 60% of that money aside as you're going through the dispute. So the dispute mechanism is not as robust or straightforward as Kenya's is. So I see that as a big difference. I see that as one of the very biggest differences. Then secondly, in terms of, we tend to be, it's quite, 80% of the time it's quite clear what you should pay tax on, how you should comply, and what your relationship or obligations are as a collector, because we also are a collector of tax. We are a big collector of tax, and so are most banks anyway. But in other jurisdiction, it's not as clear. Then 5 years down the line, you're told, you're supposed to give us this documentation, and you're like, this client did not return these documents.
Yeah,
you know, like a recent case in one of the African markets, this client 5 years ago, they did not return the import declaration forms. And you're like, was it us who were supposed to trigger for them to do that? And then they put pressure on you, and so you have to go back to your books and look for those documentation and be able to demonstrate that actually the client, even if they didn't, they returned the forms. But they also paid the tax, and this is how the breakdown was. So now we've ended up, at that situation, they are treating you like not only as a collector, but also as an enforcer, which really is not, should not be our responsibility.
Okay.
Yes.
I want us to go to the more favorable bits that you see across the other markets. And maybe before that, you could just tell us in what countries you're operating in Africa, and then perhaps you could tell us what one thing that you think is favorable, which could be adopted here in Kenya.
I think first of all, not really, but in terms of the countries operating in Southern Africa, we're in South Africa itself, we're in Botswana, we're in Zambia, we're in Mauritius, and I mentioned Botswana. And then you come to East Africa, we're with 3 markets, Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania.
Mm.
And then West Africa, we're in Ghana, and we are in Nigeria.
Okay.
And then those are the markets we are currently active.
Mm.
And when you look, I think there are different aspects. Some of them work well in terms of the way you do the returns, the certainty of the tax regime, you know, the low, the tax certainty of tax regime, the dispute mechanism. Those are really the top of the mind.
Okay.
Now, in terms of what can Kenya borrow, we've got a pretty good, without naming countries, we've got a pretty good tax regime.
Okay.
In terms of whether it's regulations. What now we need to think about is how do we use the tax regime to attract investment and also to reward investors? Because that's used quite a bit in other markets. Mm-hmm. If you look at, for instance, if you take an example like UAE, who what we call the DIFC,
mm-hmm.
Dubai International Financial Center, they've got very clear regulations around if you operate in that zone that gives tax incentives for investors who want to invest in that market.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the new regulations and the Nairobi International Financial Center that is being created, that's the same thinking as well. How do if you register your business through Nairobi International Financial Center, this is a tax regime will be simpler, probably reduced. You're paying less tax for a number of years. All this is geared towards you recouping your investment so that you're able to say, if I do this investment, and these are not small investments, they're huge investment, I'll be able to get back my investment in this number of years because of this favorable tax regime.
Yeah.
For any investor, that's the first thing they look at.
Okay.
You know, you look at the country's laws, then you look at the tax regime, because when you want to do your business case and know how long the business will take to pay back.
Yes.
These are some of the things you look at very, very quickly.
Mm.
Yes.
Mm. Which takes me actually to the next question, because there's been a lot of debate. There's a school of thought that says tax incentives don't work. They simply call it tax expenditure. Perhaps we are giving you tax incentives. You're not able to see the investment into the country and the growth that you are perhaps waiting to see. And there's the other school that says actually incentivizing growth and, you know, people coming to your country actually works. But what I hear from you is you're saying incentives actually work. So from a financial sector perspective, do you see any of the incentives that are perhaps either in Kenya or across Africa that really work for guys in the financial sector?
Yes, I believe I belong to the school of thought that they work. Because globally, you can look for enough examples to show that the incentives that you give investors make the difference. At any one time, when you think about global investors, they've got options. They always have options. I think we should never think that the only option I have is Kenya or the only option I have is Africa. They will look at what I want to set up a manufacturing plant, for instance. Mm-hmm. Or let's say I want to make cars.
Yeah.
And you have to ask yourself, how do I make sure the cars I'm building for whichever market is competitive? One of the, just to give you an example, if you look at one of the biggest challenges businesses are going through now, because of the Trump impact, a lot of businesses had moved away from, let's say the big manufacturing had moved away from China into other markets like, let's say, Vietnam, Bangladesh. And then Trump is talking about transshipment tax. So you set up your business to supply the US from Vietnam.
Yeah.
Then there's a new tax because of the so-called transshipment. You're no longer going to be competitive. Mm-hmm. That's all tax regime. You know, when you talk about tariff, what is tariff?
Yeah.
So you've got to look at it. Incentives work. You've got mm-hmm. to incentivize mm-hmm. investors to say, actually, I want to serve the East African community, 300 million people. Which of those three, which of those five countries gives me the best advantage to be able to put up my plant and put in 100, let's say 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 million dollars. Mm-hmm. Which country will give me the best incentive for me to be able to put my money and get out my investment, get paid back as quickly as possible? You can only use tax incentives. They look at the regulations you have. They will look at what incentives that you've got, and that's how you're going to put money there.
Okay.
So globally, if you look at India as well, the current prime minister, the state that he was in before, I think it was Gujarat, where was it a favorite destination for investors?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of investment in that particular state.
Yeah.
It's the incentives.
Mm.
What you are leading to, the people who say they don't work, is when you don't enforce or you don't follow mm-hmm. the commitments that on the basis of which you are granting the exemptions.
Okay.
If you come and give exemptions today, for instance, Kenya, we've got EPZs, which have created thousands of jobs, that we know, thousands of jobs. If you've given that license, then somebody comes and operates and produces the clothes there, then sells in the Kenyan market. They can't say they can't work. You're not enforcing that that is purely for export. So the jobs that are being created because there's a market that is there. So you have to enforce. These are the regulations. This is how you should operate. And then ensure that everybody is meeting that. So if one of the main reasons for a tax exemption is to create jobs, you'll be able to see are the jobs being created.
Yeah.
Is to expand your export base, you'll be able to see. So it's a question of ensuring that you enforce it. If you don't enforce it and you just do it just like that, then you're going to be a big loser.
Okay.
Any country that does that will be a big loser. You've got to enforce the basis of which you've given the exemptions.
Okay. Which takes me to a point that you mentioned. You say Kenya is, you know, the simplicity, you know, the tax dispute process is quite clear. It's not punitive in terms of putting in money before you go, for example, to appeal, which is something they tried, by the way, with the finance 2024.
And 2024.
No, 2024, yes.
Okay.
2025 again.
Yes.
And perhaps they'll try it with 2026, but it's something that we've actually been able to see, you know, it doesn't work well. But we see actually some of our neighbors trying to do it. But in any case, you comply, fine. Systems are simple, fine. But again, as a bank and, you know, the wider business that you do, you then have certain challenges from a tax perspective. I'd want to hear from you, you know, what comes to mind when you think about tax challenges or tax hurdles that then come to your desk?
I think
some are sorted, of course, by your
I think, to be honest,
to your desk.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, from a Kenyan perspective, the issue is interpretation.
Okay.
It's not something, it is interpretation. Where, for instance, this business you're doing, let's say like I think we went all the way to the Court of Appeal. You swipe your card, then there's the inter-settlement, which is done by Visa. Visa is the one that enables the settlement and the payment.
Yes.
Then there was a dispute in terms of, is that vertible?
Yes.
And that is an interpretation issue. It is not something somebody can say, this has taken me by surprise. I think that is one, that is an issue. That is interpretation. And then the other one that is not only affecting us as a financial institution, but also investors and other companies as well, is the lack of certainty.
Okay.
You need to be certain that tax is 20%, and it's 20% for 5 years. Okay. then and you're certain that rules don't change midstream.
Yeah,
we've seen what's happening now with the Minister of Finance, National Treasury. There are a lot of changes aren't happening in the finance bill; they're happening later.
Yeah.
So 2020, the December of a certain year, some changes have happened. Now that becomes a bit cumbersome. You know, tax regime needs to be simple so that people can comply with it, but also certain, so that you can plan ahead. You don't want to start a year paying X number of tax, then 3-4 months later, and something else is introduced. So that those are the two ones that come to my desk. Yeah. But by the time they're coming to my desk, it means you're in a dispute. It means you are. But the process works so well that you don't struggle much because the process, you know, the process. If there's an issue of interpretation, it's only TAT and the courts that can help us. And once that is sorted, you know, it's sorted for everybody because that becomes a precedent and that's what everybody relies on. But certainty is an issue that still needs to be addressed.
Okay.
We need a tax regime that is certain.
That talks to something that the National Treasury is trying to do. There's what they call a national tax policy, and then there's what they call a medium-term revenue strategy. You know, the medium-term revenue strategy perhaps takes us to end of 2027, 2028. But that was meant to ensure there's some form of certainty and predictability around how we run our tax affairs into the country. But if you're to be given a chance, is there one particular adjustment that you'd want to see done to, say, our tax laws within the country, over and above just simplicity and predictability? Is there, if you're perhaps asked, what one request do you have? What would that be?
I think for me is the issue of certainty. That's one. Talking for our clients, because that's when we talk to them, what is your biggest issue? Mm-hmm. Is the issue of certainty. And then avoid changes midstream.
Yeah.
There was a time everybody, all of us in the olden days, you knew that if there was any tax implication on anything, it happened in June during the June budget. That's when that's when you knew. You knew during the budget reading, that's when all the changes got done. So there was certainty. So if there's one request is, let's agree when these changes are going to be. Are they going to be in the finance bill? And then we know it's going to last for the next, I don't know how many years. So it's certain. So you plan around it. However, if you do that, then there are changes in November and December. Now you're disrupting everybody. So that's one request. That's one request I would make. That certainty is important, that you know tax changes happen at this time of the year. Then you plan around it, because then it becomes very easy to plan. Because business is also about planning. You've got to plan for the future. And you can't start moving in a certain direction. Then midstream, everything, the landscape changes. And this is landscape within human control. I'm not talking about acts of God, but landscape within human control. And that's one thing about tax that can help, the certainty. Dispute mechanism, dispute resolution is, I think, is pretty good in my view.
Okay.
Pretty good.
Okay. I hear you. As we bring this to a close, I'm looking at an investor who's looking at Kenya as their next investment destination, or even just East Africa. And they have a view of what the tax and economic environment is like, but they still see an opportunity to actually come invest into our country, East Africa at large. What piece of advice would you give to such an investor?
First of all, talk to Standard Chartered, because then we'll help you navigate this complex. You need a bank, you need a bank that understands this part of the world, not only Kenya, but Africa and Africa and Middle East. So that's what I would tell them. And then I'll also tell them that hire the right people, ensure you've got the right quality, the right caliber of people. Some of our clients who've seen, who've really struggled with the tax man, is mainly because their business grows very, very fast. So you've come, you've hired people who are not a certain level. Then when everything becomes a lot more complex, then you can't untangle yourself. So you ensure that you've got the right caliber of staff. And then three, I'll also advise them, and we advise them, don't take shortcuts. Don't be told by anybody that you can get away with this, you can get away with this. You've got a pretty good tax administrator. They will find you. They will eventually find you. And that's why you need to have, whether it's the audit companies that you've got or the staff that work for you every day, ensure they're the right caliber. That is what I would advise them. And then know that there's a dispute mechanism process that works. And I'm only talking about tax. It works. So if you're not, if you're uncomfortable here, this is the route to go. I think that's very, very clear. That's an advice I would give them. And then be very, then look at the options. Right now, I've talked about the Nairobi Finance Center. Look at it. Does that fit into your profile? Is it? Can you register your business through that? Look at the EPZs. Is that another possibility? So there are all these different options depending on what industry or what investment that you want to make in this country.
Yeah.
We have challenges, but I believe Kenya still is a very strong investment destination. When you look at the GDP growth that was there last year, what is forecasted for this year, 4.5, it's still decent growth, and the population is growing. And so I would say, yeah, I think it's still the right decision that you need to take. But take all these into account so that at the end of the day, you will say, yes, I made the right investment decision and the right destination. Yes.
So hire the right people. Do not take shortcuts. We have a system that works for tax dispute resolution, right?
Correct.
Any parting shots from you?
Yes, I think for me is to encourage to familiarize ourselves with the laws of Kenya. If you're an investor, familiarize yourself. That is very, very important. Take the time and also partner with the people who understand the landscape well. There are many professionals, whether it's on tax, whether it's matters of legal, whether it's matters of audit, whether they're financials, finances, there are enough professionals in this country that can help you and make you so that you have a good experience if you decide to invest here. Do not listen to other people who may not be necessary, who may not be as good professionals as they should be, because the landscape can be challenging, but it can be managed with the right partners.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your
Thank
time,
you.
Karaoke. It's been a pleasure having this discussion with you. To the guys who are looking forward to this, we actually do a lot of tax advice and work and at CDH. This is the Untangling Tax podcast, and where we just keep matters simple in terms of tax and, you know, the regime in terms of investment, economic realities, and helping you understand what tax is all about so that this big topic stops sounding scary and it's something that you can engage in an everyday life. Thank you very much for joining us. See you next time.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.